Today's episode of How Success Happens is part of our Build With Me series, sponsored by AT&T Business. When a customer's ready to pay, when orders are stacking up, when your team needs answers fast, that is not the time for your connection to drop. Reliable connectivity isn't a nice to have, it's how you keep your business moving and your customers happy. AT&T Business helps you stay connected and ready for what's next with connectivity you can rely on. Visit att.com/smallbusiness to learn more.
When I lost my vision, I thought, you know, I had just been teaching myself to cook and I was really voraciously reading a lot of cookbooks and stuff. And then I lost my vision. So I never wanted to depend on other people to feed myself, to make my own food. That's, I think, what helped me be successful on MasterChef is also just learning to navigate and adapt quickly to whatever challenges we were given on the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. Prepare to drool. You have been warned because today we are talking with Christine Ha, chef, author, and owner of The Blind Goat and Stuffed Belly Restaurants in Houston, Texas. You may also know her as the first blind contestant on MasterChef, and not just a contestant, the winner of season 3. So welcome, Christine.
Thanks for having me, Dan. Excited to be here.
Great to talk to you. So much I want to talk to you about. But let's start here, because you went from being a self-taught home cook to running multiple concepts. So how did you build that network of people and systems that allowed you to do that, to scale up from this 400 square foot chef station to what you have today?
It took a lot of years, a lot of reflection. Definitely being an entrepreneur, starting a business, and then growing that business and understanding more of operations, those were all huge learning curves for me. I'm actually not an entrepreneur naturally. My husband and business partner, John, is. So this is more of his wheelhouse. But I find that growing something or starting something from scratch and growing it is very fulfilling. And I think for me, it's about the people you meet along the way, the networks that you build, the support that you find, whether it be with other entrepreneurs or other restaurateurs, other people in the same position, that really helps. And then you make relationships along the way, of course, with your vendors that you start with other people in the restaurant community, in the industry. And then in terms of systems, I found that when we first started, of course, I think with many businesses, you're kind of just thrown into the deep end and you're just trying to figure it out. It's like sink or swim. And there's a million things you're trying to put together in place in order to continue down the process of growth and just maintenance as well. So for us, I think the important thing was learning how to put in standard operating procedures in place, whether it's implementing a recipe and training the entire team, having it be standardized so that every cook who looks at that recipe or learns to make the dish executes it in the same way, so that when the guests come in, they're getting a product that they know and that they understand and that they're getting a consistent product. So it's building those systems, whether it be building out like certain spreadsheets, certain web apps for our team to use to make it streamlined and as easy as possible. And, you know, whether it's recipe, costing, inventory management, all of that stuff. So yeah, it is important to put all of that into place as well to grow your business.
So you say you weren't necessarily entrepreneurial minded from the beginning. So what was your goal when you first started out?
My goal was very simple. I think having come off MasterChef, and it was actually 7 years from my winning on the show to actually opening the very first iteration of The Blind Goat as a small station in a food hall, my goal was really to serve the masses. There are so many people that were fans of the show that were following me since I was on the show asking, how can I taste your food? And if they can't make it to a one-off pop-up event or a chef's dinner that I was doing, I wanted, you know, they wouldn't be able to taste my food. So I wanted to build a place where people could come and be able to try my food. So it was really about serving other people. So my goal really initially was just to build a place to welcome people, be hospitable, and be a a pillar in the community eventually to bring people in.
That's awesome. So talk to me about stress. Which is worse, competing on MasterChef or opening a new restaurant?
I would actually say that they're both equally stressful, but I think competing on the show was very high stress in a compact amount of time. And then opening a restaurant is a high amount of stress extended over many months and even years.
Right. Okay. So does the end point, does the no end point, is it like you wake up like, oh my God, this again? Or is it something you get in the groove of?
It's a little bit of both. It's going to be more like, oh my gosh, this again, or how am I going to get through this? Or you take it day by day. And then other times you feel like you're in a good spot and it's really building that team that you trust around you that is very competent, that can help you operate the business when you're not necessarily always in the business.
So you've talked about cooking from memory. You've written about it, a great book about it, honoring your mother's Vietnamese dishes. So how do you, you know, as your network expands, as there's more people involved, like how do you keep everyone kind of core to what's important to you?
I think building your brand and having it be something that resonates and is very clear is important. So when you build your brand, there are other things that go with it. Like, what is your vision? What's your mission statement? And then from that, what does the culture look like? And I think it's important to have those things really be strong and be in place before you can bring on a team or hire new people to be part of your team or build a new place or expand the business or whatnot. So I think that sort of building your brand and having a solid foundation is important for that.
So can you give us the sort of elevator pitch of your mission statement?
My mission statement for both Stuffed Belly and the Blind Goat is to be a part of the community where we create a hospitable environment where everybody in the community is welcome at the table.
Beautiful. So talk to me about using data, sales reports or guest feedback to decide what's going to stay on the menu, what specials should become regulars, and what we should never cook again.
Yeah, that's actually very important because I think a lot of times our front of house teams in the restaurant or back of house teams in the restaurant, and they run through like a week's worth of service. And then of course they feel like, oh, we're serving this dish quite a lot, but this other dish we're not. And while those are somewhat accurate, they're not 100% accurate. So I think data is very important. So it is pulling these reports and looking at what in the industry is called PMIX, which is short for a product mix. So you're seeing like which dishes sell the most. And then you're kind of analyzing it too. And with the tools these days with the technology, and AI built into so many things, you can easily ask like, okay, which day of the week or which season of the year does this dish really sell? And then you know, okay, during the summer, perhaps cooler dishes, vegetables that are fresh, salads, they're selling more. And in the winter, you're looking at things like our Viet Cajun gumbo or like things that are more hearty and comforting. So it's always pulling those reports and looking at it because the data doesn't lie. If you have the system set up properly and in place, that's what we, John and myself, always look to. And we try to teach our management to also cling on to that data as well, because you can always guess, but the data is what never lies.
So have you ever been shocked by what the data is telling you, something that you would have totally guessed, totally different direction?
Sometimes, from time to time. Yeah. I mean, over time, I think we've noticed, like, funnily enough, like we don't own, neither one of our concepts are sports bars. So anytime there's like big sports things happening, whether it be the World Cup or the Houston Astros are in the playoffs, like we do drop. So over time, I have noticed that. But then there are some one-offs where it's like, there was like, you know, a big World Cup match, but then for some reason our restaurant was super busy. And then we try to look like, oh, is it because a lot of people are doing takeout perhaps for their watch parties or not?
Right, right.
So there's always little things that are surprising. And even, you know, to 7 years to date of having been a restaurant owner, sometimes there are just patterns that we haven't been able to figure out, even with all the data there.
So talk to me a little bit about staying true to your mission and your vibe, because when you said that, it reminded me of, I happened to be in a different city during the World Cup, and we went into a restaurant that clearly was not set up as a sports bar, but they tried to put the game on, but they couldn't get the sound working, and there was this sort of like light FM music playing, and it was awful. It would have been much better if there was just nothing there. So do you think about that? Like, let's just stay in our lane, basically?
Yeah, sometimes. I think with the World Cup, for example, I mean, we had requests for the game on, and we do have a big projector in the Blind Goat. So we knew that intentionally we would play the match, but we would have it on mute because we are not a sports bar, and I don't want to pipe the sound of the game through the speaker system. Because that's just not really our brand. So sometimes you learn to adapt just a little bit and give a little, but other times it's like, no, we're not playing, you know, the baseball, like the entire World Series on our projector, because people sometimes they do want to get away and they're there a date night or with their family and they don't want that distraction. So it's a matter of thinking like, what is something you're willing to compromise on and what are other things that you are not willing to compromise on in terms of brand?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure you get a lot of questions from restaurateurs and wondering if a first-time restaurant owner asks you about building that tech stack from day one, what are like some of the tools that you would say, start here and then you can grow from there?
Well, I would say the tools you really need to put into place is one, figuring out your recipe costing. How much are these ingredients that you're bringing in? How much are they costing you? Then you can learn to price your dishes accordingly so that you're not losing money, because you also have to think about your overhead and all of those operational expenses as well. And you have to build that into the cost of your dish. I would say inventory management is a tool that you really need to have in place so that you're not you're minimizing your waste at the end of the day or end of the week. So you're not throwing away too much product, but then you're also not running out of dishes all the time on your menu and agitating guests that come in for a particular dish. And I would say just going back to the original, like, you know, your net sales, like what your revenue report looks like, and then what your all of your P&L, your looking at all of that to know, like, how much are you spending on labor? Is it fitting within the proper percentage so that you can still profit as a business? How much are your COGS or your cost of goods sold? And just knowing all of those and keeping tabs on them, not on a monthly basis, but almost on a daily basis, will keep you your business agile.
You are a disability advocate. You've spoken at the United Nations. You serve on the Helen Keller International Board. What are some of the practices that you've brought into how you structure and grow your hospitality business that kind of stems from that bigger picture of accessibility?
For me, it is thinking about the integrity of who I am as a person and my identity as someone who is a woman of color with a disability. And then bringing that message into the workplace, in my company, in my restaurants. Whether I exhibit that to other team members on my staff or to the guests in the community, it's always staying true to myself and, you know, showing that having a disability can still be empowering depending on how you go about it, but also stating that, you know, people may think I can do all of these things, but there are still limitations that I really depend on my team and other people around me to help support and continue to make the business successful. So I think it's just really being honest and bringing all of myself from these other facets that I've, you know, that events I've done or what positions I hold into the business and say, like, this is all of me. And although I can do these things, your role is also very important because you're helping me continue to operate the business even when I'm not always there.
Yeah.
So everyone's role is important.
So can you talk a little bit about, because, you know, watching you compete on MasterChef, for example, I mean, it's just incredible what you could do on any standards. But then you remember, like, wow, she's doing this while she's blind. Like, can you talk about, like, how you taught yourself maybe to cut safely? Or it's just an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, I've always been someone who's valued independence. So I grew up an only child, and I think because my parents were both refugees from Vietnam, they really valued perseverance and independence and being a go-getter and figuring out how to navigate life in spite of whatever challenges are thrown at you. So for me, all my life, that's been ingrained in my personality. I think my first, like losing my mom when I was young as a teenager, that was, I remember, is the hardest challenge I first ever encountered in life. And that really threw me for a loop. And that took me quite a while to just navigate that life challenge. But I feel like it did set me up for, okay, later life challenges, whether that be losing my vision in my 20s or opening restaurants. I think that set me up for just learning to take things one day at a time sometimes and taking those small steps. So for example, when I lost my vision, I thought, you know, I had just been teaching myself to cook and I was really voraciously reading a lot of cookbooks and stuff. And then I lost my vision. And then I had to learn how to do everything that I had already taught myself with less and less vision. So then it came to be about, oh, how do I use a knife? Not being able to see as well. How do I deal with the stove and the microwave and other kitchen tools and gadgets without as much vision? So for me, I always valued independence. So I never wanted to depend on other people to feed myself, to make my own food. I continued to live alone at that time, even when I was losing my vision. And so I really, out of survival, I guess, in a way, and a necessity, I retaught myself how to cook with less and less sight. And then it just became, I guess, a natural instinct for me to continue doing that in spite of whatever else. And so that's, I think, what helped me be successful on MasterChef is also just learning to navigate and adapt quickly to whatever challenges we were given on the show.
Right, right. Well, it's incredibly, it's incredible. It's inspiring. And I was going to ask you about what is something about being on a cooking competition TV show that most people don't know, like what's happening behind the scenes?
Yeah, television and entertainment is not as glamorous as people think it is. Many people who are audiences at home watching the show, you know, there's the dramatic music, there's like all of the cast not getting along, or like the contestants like throwing the other one under the bus. And yes, while some of that happens, like while we're cooking, there's no dramatic music playing over the speakers. We're all just kind of cooking along. The kitchen gets hot. The days are long with the filming, you know, during my season in particular, one-hour episode that a person would watch on television actually was filmed over 2 days, and it was full days of filming. So it could be anywhere from 8 hours to 16 hours even. So I think those are the grueling things that many people watching television don't understand how much goes into making a television production.
Yeah. Wow. 2 days, man. Did it turn out good, that 2 day cook?
We got used to it. I mean, I think it's very meticulous and it can be very grueling because filming are long days. And then for me, having been there to the end, I was sequestered for a long time and away from my family and my home for a long time. So, you know, in some ways it's good. Cause I've also been a guest judge on MasterChef Vietnam. And over there, we actually filmed 7 days a week, and the season was done in a month, but we were working such, you know, long hours every day. Whereas in the US, I think with union rules and stuff, we were filming 6 days a week, but then it took perhaps like over 2 months to finish. So it's really just, do you want to drag it out or do you want to just like pull your hair out in a much shorter amount of time?
So, as a judge, what's your vibe? Are you the mean one? Are you
the mean one, Dan? I cannot be. As someone who's been in their shoes, I know how nerve wracking it can be. And even the most skilled cook can mess up because of nerves or just being given the ingredient. They don't understand that one single ingredient. So I always like to play the mentoring role where I'm very compassionate and I tell them like, you know, I understand this is hard, but do your best. And then I try to give them tips and advice from my perspective.
I would have loved if you said, oh man, I turn it on. I just rip into these people. You call this food? hard to imagine those words coming out of your mouth, but it would be fun. So tell me, what is, you've been in business for a while now. What is your business hot take? The thing you either love that people, most people hate, or the thing that just totally drives you crazy?
Okay, so I have a good one. So because I'm in the restaurant industry, now we're in the digital age where everything is about like, is it Instagram worthy or whatnot? So people are always taking content, pictures of their foods, you know, video of them eating the food. So visually, food, the way a dish looks is super important. And I do understand that. But for me, coming from someone who's vision impaired, obviously the appearance of a dish matters much less to me. So I always think about the how a dish is composed. How is it easy or difficult to eat? And how does everything taste together in a bite? Like, are you getting different textures, different temperatures, different flavor bombs in on your palate? So for me, I think something that bothers me or kind of drives me nuts is how people are so hung up on social media these days that they're not even really caring how the dish tastes and what the whole crux of why we're eating. And it's all about like, is the lighting good? Is the food, you know, does it look good and all that? So all the fancy plating. So that's something that sometimes I just can't get on board with.
I'll support that. absolutely. Well, all right. We have moved now into the How Success Happens speed test round. Are you ready? I've got four questions for you.
Sure. Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. Question one. Which U.S. metropolitan area has the second largest Vietnamese population outside of Vietnam?
Oh, I'm going to guess it's Orange County, California.
I'm going to say, where are you dialing in from right now?
Houston. I thought Orange County.
So LA, I'll give you.
Houston, Orange County, or San Jose, California. And I freaking guess wrong. I should have known better.
Well, you were correct. LA is the first. Houston, maybe I could have hit that second largest a little harder. So that's on me. Okay. Second question. The original MasterChef format that inspired the US version actually came from which country?
The UK?
Correct.
Thank God.
Nailed it.
50-50. Still failing.
All right. Next question. Who hosted the first cooking show on network TV? And here's a hint, you have been recognized several times by this person's foundation. Foundation. We're looking for
foundation. Okay. I mean, I'm involved in different foundations, but there's one I can think of that I have been recognized with. So James Beard?
That is correct. James Beard hosted a show none of us have ever heard of called I Love to Eat, which was on TV in 1946. And then finally, I think you're going to nail this one.
Don't be so sure, Dan.
What Vietnamese dish holds the title as the best hangover cure food?
Pho.
Boom. Like, you didn't even have to think about that. That is the correct answer. So I think you did pretty good because those were, as I was starting to read those, I was like, how on earth would anybody know that? So, hey, we all learn together.
Yeah, we do.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and share your advice. And for people who aren't in the Houston area, what are some other ways they could kind of keep up with you and what's going on?
Yeah, I am on social media. So my handle on most social media platforms is The Blind Cook. So just follow me there. And you can learn about my upcoming cookbook that should be published out in the spring. And then just the goings on in the restaurants and other cool things that I'm working on. So social media.